remember there was an entire Parks and Rec episode about Twilight.
I don't remember that, but I didn't see very much Parks and Rec in my day.
There was. It's like, who is it? I think Will Forte's the guest star, and he wants Twilight in a town time capsule. And that's like the A plot of the episode somehow.
I do remember that. We just finished rewatching Parks and Rec.
Yeah?
I remember that.
How does it hold up?
Pretty good, except for like the first season, which was always bad.
Yeah, there was nothing there to age. It came out bad.
Yeah, it's like watching it again now. Is it the Battle of the Bands? The one where like they first introduced Mouse Rat and the Pit is the first one that they're like, we got it. We figured it out. Leslie's not actually a joke. Leslie is the hero of this story. And also Chris Pratt, really funny.
Oh, that's right.
And then
we talked about like where we figured it out that he probably filmed Jennifer's body between seasons one and two. Like, I think I remember we tried like actually figuring out that like on the timeline, like when he would have filmed that. And I think we figured out that was between seasons one and two. He would have filmed Jennifer's body.
Yeah. Because he does not die in Jennifer's body.
No, he should. No. He doesn't appear enough in Jennifer's body. He's there for like 3 minutes as like a cop Jennifer is sleeping with.
Sure. Sounds right.
Anyway, yeah.
It's also really weird watching the whole of Parks and Rec and Andy like walk off screen one day weighing 100 less or 100 more pounds and walk on screen the next day like 100 less pounds. It's very strange.
Oh, that's that Marvel experience, baby.
He just starts wearing very large sweaters, so you can't tell that he's in an entirely different shape than he was a minute ago. Yeah, wild. All right, let's talk about this movie instead.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I did not write a description of Underworld. I wonder what I'll say.
Good evening, and welcome to Progressively Horrified, the show where we hold horror to standards it absolutely never agreed to.
Good evening and welcome to Progressively Horrified, the podcast where we hold horror to progressive standards it never agreed to. Tonight, we're talking about the movie that really just divided us between what kind of horror monsters we are. Are you a wet, shirtless horror monster, or are you a pale monster that runs around in lingerie and leather? That's right. It's Underworld. I am your host, Jeremy Whitley, and with me tonight, I have a panel of cinephiles and cenobites. First, they're here to challenge the sexy werewolf, sexy vampire binary, my co-host, Ben Cohen. Ben, how are you tonight?
Finally! We are at last doing Nine Inch Nails, the masquerade movie!
And on that note, the cinnamon roll of cenobites, our co-host, Emily Martin. Emily, how are you tonight?
Beep, 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 beep. Yes, Trent Watch, folks. It's on. We have a Trent Watch. Also, in the music, but very, very vaguely. But we'll get into that.
Incredibly, and I'll get into this, incredible amount of restraint this movie shows in terms of music and nothing else.
Yeah.
Speaking of Trent, this movie feels like they sampled guitar from a Nine Inch Nails song and fed it through an AI to make the soundtrack, and then that's as far as they got. There's lots of places in this movie where I'm like, and the lyrics go, no, they're just, it's just more guitar riff. Okay.
Let's introduce our last guest so I can start to go absolutely fucking feral over this movie.
Then our guest tonight, artist and friend of the podcast, Phoenix, welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me back. As a child of the 2000s, this movie was like a beautiful home-cooked meal, truly. Thank you very much for having me on for this one.
A lot
of carbohydrates in this one.
Oh, yeah.
I love this movie because this movie came out 2003. You know, I was 13 when it came out. I watched it a bunch, like, just as a teenager. But I hadn't really seen it since, like, being a teenager. And I have to say, this movie was absolutely as sexy, as stylish, as badass, and as utterly vapid as I remember.
Yeah, if this is a home-cooked meal, it is the microwaved and flavor-dusted home-cooked meal. It's just,
It's with the terrible brownie and everything.
This movie is the cinematic equivalent of a Ferrari, but then you look under the hood and instead of an engine, it's a microwave with a hot pocket in it.
God bless it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to go ahead and say right up here at the top, I will be making some White Wolf jokes. Speaking of Masquerade, but otherwise, when this movie came out, I was in college. It was very freshly in college. A lot of LARPers around me. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Emily, I want you to know that there is a scene in this movie of Michael Sheen growling and writhing around as he expels bullets from his body. And I immediately thought, Emily's going to need to lie down watching movie.
Oh, yeah. No, and that's during the Trent Reznor, Danny Lohner remix of Judas by Perfect
Song. I have to talk about the people involved in this movie. So it is directed by Len Wiseman, not Paul W.S. Anderson, as you might be inclined to think, given the time and the aesthetic.
So.
So it is co-written by Len Wiseman as well as Danny McBride. No, not that Danny McBride. I wish it would be so much better if it was.
I would love to see that Danny McBride's take on Werewolves vs. Vampires.
Yeah, it is also created, like the world is created and is written by and starring Kevin Grevioux, who you may know is also a comic book writer. There's something so early 2000s comic book writer about this movie. Like,
oh my God, right?
Yeah, it's just
so badass. I fucking love this guy though. He's so fucking cool.
Yeah, he plays the werewolf with the deepest voice in the history of voices.
Like, he fucking took one look at Michael.
That is his actual voice.
No, shut the fuck up.
Altered in no way. That is the way he sounds.
Amazing.
Oh my gosh.
This dude is the coolest motherfucker on the planet.
His casting in there is obvious. Like, Len Wiseman is directing, but does not sneak in there. Danny McBride sneaks his way into part of the cast as well. So two out of the three writers are also acting in this, which is the least wild casting choice of anybody in there. We have Robbie G, who you will recognize as, I don't know, the nervous black character in any, like, British crime drama from the, like, early 2000s and late 90s.
That's where I recognize him from. He's from fucking Snatch.
Yes.
Fucking, yeah, oh my God, this was bothering me the whole time. Oh, okay. Yeah. He's from fucking Snatch. Okay, that's where I know him. Okay, I'm good now. I'm not good. I'm going to be fucking insane this whole episode.
Wentworth Miller, who plays a doctor, has a first name and is definitely in this movie.
The sound that came out of my mouth when I remembered that Wentworth Miller is in this movie.
Yeah, so we also have Sophia Miles, whose entire job is to run breathlessly into rooms and hide around corners in this entire movie. That is all she does the whole thing.
Justice for her.
Kate Beckinsale, for whom this was like a huge breakout role. Like, this movie made Kate Beckinsale who she became for the next 10 years and then disappeared. I don't know where Kate Beckinsale is now.
Wherever you are, Kate.
I don't know.
This entire movie is just balanced on top of her head. Like, she's doing the most that she can to make this work while also doing like a clearly directorial instructed, you're a vampire. You have to sound very serious and cold about everything.
She is fucking immaculate in every goddamn frame of this movie.
No, we she have looks, to talk about also, well, like, I mean, she does. She looks amazing.
She Kate looks Beckinsale. Good. She's bringing it. There is one, anything where she is having any sort of issue visually is all costume department. And that is with that weird leather fucking whatever the halter top that she has when she's
what no okay no I will hear no fucking slander about her incredible leather tank top.
That's really goofy. I don't
understand
she lives in a goddamn LARP mansion. They don't have t-shirts at that fucking house.
I know. I mean, like, I just thought it was just really
I wish there was one vampire in that house just chilling out wearing a Judas Priest t-shirt.
Listen, you guys, listen. This is it. Down to the music. This is the scene
that the Key and Peele sketch takes place where they're this
movie, this is the most unironic distillation of that vibe of vampire. When she walks in the mansion and there's just 12 vampires in the fanciest fucking outfits just doing nothing.
There is
somewhere
in this abandoned London that this movie takes place in, because there's nobody on the streets. Leather outlet and a fucking Victorian clothing outlet next to each other that this house full of vampires is keeping in business by themselves.
Yeah. London fog and this international imports.
This movie is clearly set in Prague Hatton.
Okay.
Four more people that I need to talk about that are in this movie. In the fucking wildest casting choices in the world, we have Michael Sheen and Bill Nye on opposite sides of this as the sexy, charismatic number one vampire and number one werewolf.
Yes, somehow. They're so good. And Michael Sheen, the fucking goat in this movie.
Michael Sheen is doing his damnedest. Bill Nye is also present.
Yes.
This is true.
See, Michael Sheen across the board, fucking Underworld, Tron Legacy, fucking Prodigal Son, Good Omens.
He was a Tron Legacy?
Oh, yes, he was. He was
I forgot.
He was the cracked the fuck out nightclub owner who betrays them.
Some of the wild lore shit that Bill Nye has to deliver in this, I can just see him sitting at home with this script, like making a jerk off motion as he's reading
Bill
it.
Bill Nye, but here's the thing, Bill Nye, it's enough. He still hams it the fuck up. He's just like making weird, shaky, writhy motions. At one point, he just starts like biting the air.
Yeah, it was scenery.
Like it's amazing. Like Bill Nye, I cannot imagine gave a single shit about any part of the script and yet cared enough to be like, yes, make me the gooeyest fucking corpse that has ever been on movie screens.
The wildest thing about this movie is like how crazy that it is that the two of them are in it and are doing the absolute most with what they have. And then you have the complete charisma vacuums that are Scott Speedman and Shane Brawley in this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Just like sitting there absorbing any momentum this movie might have. They're just, anytime they're on screen, it's like, oh, right. Craven's in this scene, I guess.
Craven. Yeah. Craven is both the worst character and the worst acting in the movie. I'm sorry, Shane Brawley. Some offense.
It was such an important, I feel like it was sort of the everything's moving because of this character. But literally, every time he was on screen, I was like, my God. We move along.
Someone like Scott Speedman, it had to have been that he was in a modeling shoot or an advertisement. And so it was like, those are eyes a vampire could get lost in for days and just cast him on the spot.
Yeah. No, he was very objectified in this film. And
he's the damsel in distress. He is Scott Speedman is the female lead of the movie.
He is. It's a supporting role.
Yeah. He is an absolute vacuum of characteristics whatsoever. Like there is nothing about this character, period.
I never thought I would be watching a movie and be like, damn, I could really go for the acting talent of Paul Walker right now.
Scott Speedman is what's in the suit, the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
R.I.P., but I had to go for the appropriate 2000s comparison.
Oh, yeah. No, but we say that with affection.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
Yeah. He's just so uninteresting, but next to Shane Brawley, he comes out looking like a fucking champ. Shane Brawley should be greasy and he should be so hateable. This should be a fucking Loki character. Like you should come out of this him being your favorite character, Hiddleston being the worst. If Hiddleston had been in this movie, everybody would still remember the character of Craven. Unfortunately, Hiddleston is not in this movie.
He's not even he's so bad. I hate him. It's just because when he's on screen, I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to look at you. I don't want to hear you. can we just skip to when you're no longer in the movie?
Yeah. No, it,
Phoenix, what did you say about his shirt?
Oh, okay, that shirt he wears for the party.
Oh, I saw it,
and I was like, why is he wearing pieces of sandpaper? Like, I want to eat drywall looking at that. I hate it.
Oh, no. I had a note about his shirt. I said he looks like the goth version of an abusive 1970s country star manager.
A little bit, yeah. Uh-huh.
This so just bad. Looks like they need another character there.
They should have just had like a cardboard cutout of Tom Hiddleston, and they'd be like,
I have to imagine it was supposed to be Victor from the beginning, and they were like, we can afford Bill Nighy for half the shoot.
It was really funny because he's so like uncharismatic that like I was watching him and like he would say things to Celine that were like a little bit like, you know, like a little bit like my queen coded. And I was like, oh, he's totally one of those characters. And then I forgot he was there. And then like at one point he literally says, so she will be my queen. And I was like, oh, he was supposed to be doing that. Just
oh, yeah, no, he's like a full on fucking m'lady-ing.
He's so God. But he can't. He's trying his best. It's just not happening. Yeah.
When Scott Speedman opens that fucking door and he shoots him like three times, I was like, I too forgot Craven was there. That makes sense.
He wasn't surprised about getting shot. He expected that. It was the Craven part that was the shock.
It's like those fucking aliens in that season of Doctor Who where like you don't remember they exist as soon as you look away from them.
I watched Lord of the Rings on acid and anytime Merry and Pippin appeared for 2.5 movies.
That's too bad.
That is too bad. They're fun. I totally see how that's possible, though.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
It's more the fact that like those movies are so long that like you will check in with a character literally once an hour.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot going on. It's long.
And I was incredibly on acid.
Oh yeah, that would not help with that.
Sounds like a nice though. Like I feel like.
Oh my! Look, it was a wonderful birthday party for my friend.
Oh, awesome! Yeah, Lord of the Rings. I feel like would be cool, pretty chill. You know, it's not.
No, it was great. Again, I have heard people say like I took psychedelics and I came away with like a deeper understanding and connection to humanity and the world. And I'm like, I never had that shit, but I do have a deeper understanding and connection to Lord of the Rings now.
Sometimes that's what it takes to have that deeper understanding with Lord of the Rings. That's why so many hippies love it.
Me and Faramir.
I'm not going to lie. There was a certain amount of like, I knew I loved these movies, but I get them now.
Yes. Scott Speedman, all I can say about him in this movie is that someone, whoever was directing, like whoever was trying to figure out his whole like direction in the movie was like, just stand there and then we will shoot this. To either make you look like a grunge star, and that's it. Like there was mostly sometimes it was Trent Reznor, sometimes it was Gavin Rosdale. They certainly made him wet.
Okay, but what if they replaced him with a puppy? I'm just saying, like
It would have been better.
It would have been much better.
I feel like they were trying to go for that golden retriever energy, but oh boy, did Scott Speedman at this time not have the range.
I do believe
Scott Speedman has very much like having seen him in more recent stuff, he is 100% like really grown and developed as an actor, but this movie is early.
I'm not sure if the man's new, like if that character actually understood anything that was happening, like
even by the end of it.
At the end, he was like, what's going on? Like, I have a headache. My tummy hurts.
For somebody who is like a lore nerd, the lore in this is so fucking dense.
Crazy how much lore it is because it's all just vampires versus werewolves.
Yes, it's vampires versus werewolves, but there's so much lore, but then the presentation of the vampires and the werewolves on the screen is really confusing because you can't tell who's a vampire and who's a werewolf because they're all wearing duster coats and holding guns that have way too many bullets.
Female werewolves?
Nah, not that I saw.
No, we did not get any female.
I think I saw one.
Okay. We get no female werewolves, and each side gets one black guy each.
Only one. Listen, one.
And Victor has an Asian hench vampire, and that is the extent of our diversity in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, our diversity is there's basically two types of people, pale ones and wet ones.
Pale and wet is often the case.
See, that's where Scott Speedman's character is so important because he is pale and wet.
That's true. That's,
he's the hybrid.
He's the hybrid.
In this movie, thematically, it all comes together. I'm kidding. This movie is nothing. Thematically, this movie is nothing.
This movie like Anne or like.
There's this whole like mythology of there being two vampire covens that have separated out, and there's Amelia and this other group of vampires that we only see on this train before they all get murdered.
I cannot emphasize that's very important
that they're somehow reuniting at this point and bringing the vampire lord that we never actually see in this movie. Marcus, is it?
Marcus.
He's the main villain of the sequel.
Yeah, that they're bringing. They're supposed to be bringing him back, and like. I feel like this whole like thing with all that going on is given so little attention in the movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like, oh wait, this is like a big thing? Okay. And then like poor Bill Nye has to come out and be like, for 1,000 years, nobody has ever broken the chain. There are three of us, and you bring one of us out every 100 years, then you swap us out like Pokemon. You give the other two to Nurse Joy, and like I'm just.
This is where we needed a Kieran. This is where we needed the Hickman style info page detailing like the vampire lords and how their chronology works. Also, Emily, Tony Curran plays the villain in the sequel.
Whoa, somebody that Emily used to look up. That's rare.
I mean, I'm not my math. Okay, yeah, my repertoire. is very, very specific to a certain kind and time of movie.
Okay, understandable.
All the mononymous characters in this movie, especially, too, is so funny to me. They're so, like, action figures. Like, that we've got,
this
like...
Absolutely.
Lucien, this movie... Craven, Singe, Rays,
Soren,
Trix, again, Rigel. The 2000s comic book energy of this movie is off the fucking charts. Like, I talked about Malignant feeling like a late 90s, early 2000s comic book that never was. I mean, this was literally an early 2000s movie by an early 2000s comic book writer.
Yes. The names in this movie really do feel like, I feel like I use the same name generator as them. Like, for real. It's like... exceedingly cartoonish, and like honestly for the level of brain power this movie's on, I think it just needs to be action figures hitting each other. That's where it's strongest.
What this movie always reminded me of is an Xbox first person shooter.
Yes.
Where everyone has their
show up and start running along the walls and she just has to shoot all of them.
Yeah, she's just got to like, yeah, exactly. Oh my god, yeah. And she's got her special silver bullets and also their special sunlight bullets and whips and special fucking silver shuriken. The fucking whips. Remember when the guy just fucking busted
that guy
out
is such
silver
a like, fucking
whips?
Level boss. Like the whips have not come up at any point up until then. And
so
then like they're fighting
like,
and the guy's like, "Let me throw off my jacket and here's my giant fucking whips." It's like, "Wait, what? How is that?"
Also,
how is that still a werewolf?
Also, once you get the backstory that the werewolves were slaves to the vampires and the werewolves rebelled, I mean, that's the thing. If this movie does have themes, which I think it's trying to, part of the problem is that if you take it to its natural conclusion, the message is biracial kids have superpowers.
Okay.
Jeremy?
I've got to say, the last half hour of this movie drove me nuts because the two leads find out via inherited flashbacks that like that all of this started because the werewolves were enslaved and the vampires who they've been working with are actually the bad guys, and that Celine finds out that she was turned to a vampire by the guy that actually murdered her family as opposed to the werewolves she thought murdered her family, which is her entire reason for going around killing werewolves throughout this movie. But she doesn't stop killing werewolves at that point. She just keeps murdering every fucking werewolf that comes within line of vision with her. She just like continues to mow them down despite now knowing that they are the ones in the right, that they were enslaved, that she should by all rights be working with them against
as much as
bad guys.
I love every second that Kate Beckinsale in this movie. Selena as a character is like fucked up.
Terrible. Like, bad person.
We introduce her going, my main purpose in life is to do him like a genocide, but I'm almost done genociding and now I'm sad I'm not going to be able to genocide anymore.
Insane first line. I was like, I fell back into my chair and went, wow. Jeez.
That is her first lines in the movie.
Yeah. Here's the thing, folks. Now, you see the vampires. The vampires are all about purity and stuff like that. They seem pretty fascist and pretty, like, elitist and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, that sucks. But then, like, the werewolves have a fucking, like, Joseph Mengele fucking German doctor guy.
Sure, there's a this is a movie. I love this movie. This is a movie that not only has a werewolf mad scientist, it also features werewolf cops.
Those were werewolf cops. Okay.
Yes.
There's no way to tell.
I didn't know if they were werewolves.
Well, part of the problem is that we know vampires have, like, fangs and manicured nails, but then a lot of the werewolves go into, like, half werewolf state, which also gives them fangs and claws.
The worst part, too, is that they both have, like, blue eyes, but they're activating their, like, magical power. So it was, like, no way. There's, like, no Teen Wolf style, like, eye color chart for me to follow, which would have been very helpful in this.
It would have been.
Movie.
Oh, just, no, like vampires.
Well,
the hybrid
has black eyes.
Yeah,
that was the one special one.
It would have been useful if it would have been like, yeah, vampires have blue eyes and werewolves have fucking lichens. I'm calling them fucking werewolves.
Call them werewolves because lichens, that's what you get on a tree.
Yeah.
I see just someone on fucking, like, Zonga or fucking MySpace being like, they're not werewolves, they're lichens, and I'm like, go fucking shove you in a goddamn locker.
Yeah.
I love that, like, there's two things in this movie that I love just for how dumb they are, which is, like, our introduction to Lucien.
My list is way longer.
Like, these are top two for me because there's a lot of them. But our introduction to Lucien, where, like, Celine hears werewolves fighting from a distance, and we get zoomed into this, like, werewolf fight club where they're, like, beating each other up, and fucking Michael Sheen walks in as Lucien and basically, like, breaks up the fight with, like, a Reese Darby level, we're werewolves, not swearwolves. like, that's the energy he's giving at that point, is like, don't fight, guys. We're civilized werewolves.
When Michael Sheen walks on the screen with that hair, none of us were ready for it.
No. Yeah,
it's wild. And then the other thing is getting to the end of the movie and the, like, multiple climaxes of this movie, each being more disappointing than the last. It's like, when
that's
finally, like, Michael gets he gets vampire plus werewolf and turns into blue man. Like,
yeah.
That's vampire plus werewolf into blue.
Cool-ass vampire.
His eyes were black. The rest of him, he was gray. That motherfucker was a goddamn Veruca Salt blueberry looking motherfucker.
He was not that blue. He was
very
gray.
Blue.
He was blue.
He was so blue.
He was
the color grading.
Everything in this movie is blue, like, my because models. The filter is shot through. Yeah. But he is especially blue. And
he's very
that's
reflective.
Fucking wild. And that they spend the whole movie building up how terrifying Marcus is, or not Marcus, but fucking Victor. And then like kills Victor by jumping at him from behind with a sword and cutting his head in half.
It had a real bullets my only weakness energy to
it. Yes. Also, it's anime. It's like, he got an anime death and I appreciated that. I was like, got you guys. I see you. You see me. We see each other. Like, it would have been cooler if it was like half his whole body, like in fucking Interview the Vampire. But
what if there had been a sword fight up to that point?
That would have been nice.
You know, it wasn't just her, like, coming into the middle of him murdering the other guy and just being like, one jump, one slash. I've never wielded a sword in this movie up to this point. But
the only thing I can think of is that they watched, like, the sword fight between Blade and Deacon Frost and were like, well, we can't do that.
But especially, like, the fact that they can't do that, but like, oh yeah, because she's just sitting there off screen. Like, I guess she's just reeling, thinking about like, oh my God, my whole life is a lie. But like, it's been like 20 minutes and you're like, boyfriend's getting his ass pummeled by like this guy. Could you get up maybe? It's like a sword fight would have been nice.
This movie is wild. There's a whole sequence where Scott Speedman is at the LARP mansion, fucking runs away, sticks around for 20 minutes, and then just goes back to the LARP mansion.
Dude, why didn't she question that? She just went to the gun range and she was all like, I wonder where that guy went. Oh, well, I'm gonna blow off some steam.
This movie is fucking
he really should have been a puppy.
Like, it should have been a puppy.
I don't care. Like, I could do without making him look like he's in Happiness and Slavery video and fucking Woodstock 94, like Trent Reznor.
For the
business,
level of
like,
just exposition that's dumped on him that he does not react to, he might as well have been a puppy.
He should have been a wolf. Like, he should have just been a wolf. And they were like, we found this wolf. This, like, the first wolf. And then she, I mean, it couldn't be, a romance or whatever, but there was negative chemistry. There was negative chemistry with anyone on screen, except for flashing each other in the beginning.
It's literally, like, he saves her from drowning, and she's like, I have feelings for you for the rest of the franchise.
Yeah,
and it's like, the moment that they kiss.
Yes.
That's the case.
It just felt like, oh, are we kissing now? Like, is that?
Yeah,
it's so funny when you get to like Underworld 4 and they build and it's like Celine and Michael, the greatest love story of vampire kind. It's like, okay. It's nothing.
I have a genuine question. Michael.
Yes.
Is this a hidden world magic system, or is it commonly accepted that these like vampire and werewolves are just like a reality? I can't tell because
they're around.
No, I think it's hidden world because like they always make
called
sure to,
underworld
like, yeah because the news reports in the beginning aren't like, hey, vampires and werewolves were having themselves a tussle. It was just like, fuck, mass shooting,
you know.
Yeah,
that's fair.
That's where we get the America part of Prog-Hattan.
Well, to be fair, I literally put in my which this is a little embarrassing, I couldn't tell that like Lucian was a werewolf until like an hour and 30 minutes into this film, where I was told, and then I was like, oh, that makes more sense now. But like in the thing, like it takes like a half hour for anyone to do something supernatural in any of these fight scenes, and it's like when Lucian like forces the bullets out of himself, and I was like, or you know, besides just turning into a werewolf, but like that's
one thing I will give this movie credit for, we are now again more than 20 years after this movie. This is the early 2000s when bad CGI was being used very irresponsibly across the industry. That werewolf transformation effect, more than 20 years later, still looks fantastic.
Totally.
Still looks good, yeah.
Yeah, this movie does have good-looking werewolves. Now,
this movie looks good. Like, this is a very well-shot movie with good...
well-oiled.
Props, costumes, set design, cinematography, lighting, like at a very technical level, this movie is very well done. Like it's a really good looking movie.
It does look good and it is consistent. It's like The Matrix in that, you know, it has a thing that it does and it does that thing well.
And very much so. Like this movie is entirely style over substance, but it's so committed to its style and its style is so engaging that like just like this movie is pleasant to watch just on like a visual level.
Yeah, it's not. Well, what I would say is that it's visually not really challenging, except for the part where you try to keep the werewolves and vampires separate.
Like, oh, you never gonna fucking do that. That's never happening.
You're just like, what's that movie where the British guys shoot stuff? Not Snatch. That one's a punch. What was the one? The one with the
Lawrence of Arabia.
Sure, whatever. Anyway, but
Lockstock?
Lockstock and Two Smoking Barrels. Well, I was thinking of a different one, but Lockstock is actually a better one. That's the one that Snatch is based on, right?
That's the one that comes after Snatch. It's
the
next Guy Ritchie movie.
Okay. I don't know.
Oh, Statham. How fucking good is Statham in Snatch?
Very good.
Like, how good is Brad Pitt in Snatch?
Oh my God. His best role. Straight up his best fucking role. Oh, but anyway, I could do a whole episode about Snatch.
We'll talk about Snatch.
We'll do that off the air. That'll be our next Patreon bonus.
Yeah, we'll talk about
we're going through the complete filmography of Guy Ritchie, and by complete filmography I mean the first two.
Yes. the end. Yeah, no, this movie is basically like you have your two Matrix teams, and then one of them has light bullets and one of them has dark bullets, and it's like Ikaruga but with Matrix teams. The end. Like, that's it.
It
and
should have just
great.
Been Splatoon. There we go. You just different, you know, you got your silver, you got your UV.
Well, I mean,
Splatoon has color in it.
That's true. No, you're right.
This movie, it wears its influences on its sleeves. It straight up, it wants all of like the style and template of like Vampire the Masquerade. It wants its protagonist to have like a whole lot of like Lara Croft, and because Tomb Raider was big, like Matrix had come out just a few years ago, so you have to make sure everyone's wearing like Matrix leather and doing all the good Matrix fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's not to its detriment. Like, it's like it does all these well, but like it's very much just like you can see all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah, and apparently the Perfect Circle song that they play while Lucian is doing his like weird bite bullet situation is in every movie. Like, there's a version of that in every movie. Like, that's the theme, which I'm like, that's weird, but okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, of all of the post-90s metal stuff that they like, post-90s alternative that they could use, I'm not using the term new metal because I respect, well, I don't know if respect is a term. I appreciate.
We can respect Perfect Circle.
Yeah, I know. Perfect Circle's good. And like, the fact that it's not like all Power Man 5000 or whatever, or like, what the fuck is the other one?
Boba Flex?
Sure. I love the Boba Flex with the milk tea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is a real one. I did not pull that one out of my ass. That is a real example.
I believe you.
But I think that's the one Chuck Norris used to do the commercials for, right?
I mean, as much as this movie is, and again, we've talked about how, again, anyone who says the 2000s doesn't have its own fucking aesthetic, fucking wrong. Yes. So fucking wrong. We've covered a lot of aggressively 2000s movies. This is very much one of them. But one thing that I do commend it for that sets it apart from stuff like the first Resident Evil movie or that Jet Li movie, The One, these movies fucking XXX, like these movies that truly could not help themselves and just had like wall to wall this like post grunge slash new metal that has aged so laughably now. And not that Underworld doesn't have any of it, but it's a lot more restrained compared to its contemporaries. Like, again, there's that, again, we get the song when Lucian is sexily expelling bullets out of him. And again, we get Perfect Circle. Again, one of the better bands of that. So if you're going to do it, fuck yeah, Perfect Circle.
Listen, buddy, I still got the Daredevil soundtrack, okay?
Yeah, you know what I'm fucking talking about. You know what I'm talking about.
That's how we all learned about Evanescence.
The one literally ending with Papa Roach's Last Resort playing while Jet Li fights on a murder pyramid.
So okay, good.
Like, I just want to say something really quick, just for everyone all of our listeners. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's going to be quick. Blade came out before The Matrix. Mm-hmm. I just want you to remember. I want people to remember this.
97 and 99.
Yes, we credit The Matrix for a lot of things, but we also should credit Blade because.
Oh, 100%.
Anyway, continue.
Well, just that, like, it shows up there. It shows up in, you know, in a diegetic way when the cops, like, intentionally play it loud to drown out Michael screaming and the credits. But, fuck it, the movie's over. That doesn't really count. Like, as much as this movie is able to very much have the vibe and the atmosphere of those songs without actually beating you over the head by playing those songs nonstop, like a lot of movies of this era did.
Yeah, no, I was really, like, when I saw it in the theater and I heard that track kind of come in as he was, like, doing his weird writhing dance, and I was like, hell yeah!
Well, that's the thing, is that it actually has impact, because it's something different in the movie. Like, you know, it is mostly a film score, so when it does shift, it actually carries weight and stands out.
Yes. Do you want to recap the movie, Ben?
Yeah, let's do that shit.
All right. Now that we talked about it for an hour.
Look, I told you I was going to go fucking feral on this episode. Oh, yeah, no, I'm warned you.
I'm 100% here for this.
All right, recap time. So, yeah, we start in with our classic narration. You know, Celine does her fucking fantasy action movie narration, deep lore. It's vampires versus werewolves. It's just fucking, there's so much backstory and so many characters, and it's just fucking vampires versus werewolves.
What it is just them being
I love
like,
it.
Isn't White Wolf. This isn't the White Wolf lore, so you guys got to forget that. This is a different thing.
New lore.
Yeah, new thing.
Anyway, vampires are winning, werewolves are almost extinct, and Selena's big sad she can't do no genocide no more. Again, what a fucking character introduction. I can't. And like you said, Jeremy, she does, her arc isn't even, I was wrong to do genocide. Nope. Her arc is just, I like that I have a crush on this boy now.
Yeah.
It's okay. He's not a real werewolf. He's a blue man from the Blue That's Man different. Group.
I guess her arc is like she went from wanting to kill werewolves to now she's okay killing werewolves and vampires.
She'll kill everybody, and now her
she'll
dark
kill everybody.
Is
the the degree to which Celine's arc in the franchise going forward mirrors Mila Jovovich in Resident Evil is fucking hilarious.
That's why people get them mixed up.
They just get more and more superpowers to every movie. It's fucking great. Meanwhile, in Pragmatton, werewolves are trying to kidnap Scott Speedman because, again, he's got them eyes. You could just lose yourself in for days. Celine and the werewolves have a big, fun mass shooting where everyone uses their special Xbox guns at each other. And Scott Speedman gets away. And Celine is like, I think there's a lot of werewolves. And then they're up to werewolf stuff. Again, we meet the werewolf leader, Lucien, who is not dead, despite the narration telling us he's dead. And as we discussed, he's Michael Sheen, and he's the fucking goat. Celine goes back to her mansion where all the vampires live, and the current leader of the Coven, tongue twister, is mad at Celine because he's just a shithead. Craven sucks. Maybe he had motivation, but I tuned out.
He
anyway.
Same as Craven for fuck's
Craven. Sake. Right. Like who picked that? It was like,
yeah, Bill Nye, why did you pick a guy named Craven?
True.
You
should have known.
I'll have you know it's actually Oliver Craven the Fourth.
He still decided to go by Craven as his vampire handle.
That's a red flag. That's the whole shop of red flags.
Yeah.
And again, the current conflict at the moment is Celine wants to do atrocities to werewolves, and Craven is like, no, or actually like, fine, but not you. Someone who's not so murder happy can go genocide the werewolves for a second. But Celine's mad, so she keeps investigating, and she realizes that the werewolves were after Scott Speedman, and she goes to get him herself.
Wait, was Craven the whole time?
No, because he was working with Lucien to engineer a whole murder plot. He knew Lucien was, in fact, up to something because he was working with him, and they were going to do a whole murder thing to put Craven on top.
He was trying to keep her out of it because she's the detective who's so entrenched with her job that nothing will stop her.
Right. Okay. Because I was is Craven based?
No.
She was off the force. No. Give me your badge and gun. Like, that was the vibe.
Yeah.
It was more like the dirty cop trying to get rid of the detective sniffing too close.
Yeah. Yes. Although, Lucien, like, teaming up with Lucien, I mean, Lucien's based, right?
Lucien's very based. Well, no?
No, because he's got a Nazi scientist working for him.
He does have a Nazi scientist. That's true. Lucien did do an Operation Paperclip. Sure did.
I keep going like, oh, but at least he was, wait a second. I don't really like any of these bitches.
Sure did. I do love how part of his plan is just go through the phone book and kidnap everyone named Corbin and just test their blood.
It's like Sleeping Beauty. Kill everyone that is a woman.
Quickly. It's the only way.
Destroy everyone
it's a good thing symbol. All of the werewolf cops are in, like, I guess are in on it. Like, the detectives are also werewolves, so nobody's going like, hey, how come everyone named Corvin is showing up dead?
Listen, there's not a single human being in this whole movie. You can't convince me, all right?
Not true. We're about to meet the one human being because that's... Michael works at a hospital and we get to see baby-faced Wentworth Miller wearing a Muppet wig. Wentworth, if that's your actual hair, I'm really sorry.
I'm sorry to hijack this. Jeremy sent me a little snippet here. And this is something that I had forgotten about because I was so aggravated that all of my LARP friends were like, it's basically White Wolf. White Wolf's gonna sue. I didn't think it was a real thing because I'll make the World of Darkness jokes until the cow comes home. But I always appreciate somebody's like new version of the whole vampire werewolf debacle. So White Wolf and author Nancy Collins filed suit against Sony Pictures, Screen Gems, and Lakeshore in 2003 for copyright infringement after the theatrical release, alleging 17 counts of copyright infringement specifically, claiming over 70 points of unique similarity between White Wolf's World of Darkness role-playing games and Nancy A. Collins' short story, The Love of Monsters, published in 1994 by White Wolf, set in the World of Darkness, where she claims the entire plot of Underworld is based on. The suit was settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. So,
yeah. Does this movie take from Vampire the Masquerade? So much so that they sued this movie and got a whole bunch of money to go away.
Also, I have to say, Vampire the Masquerade, the system, the World of Darkness world, has this really cool ideas in there, but there's a lot of appropriation, guys. A lot of those like 90s vampire books are first of all, there's a whole vampire crew that are based off of the G-Slur. So, you know, thumbs up, cringe. Okay, anyway, on with the Underworld.
Yeah, anyway, at Michael's apartment, Celine gets more fight scenes and Lucien bites Michael. And then Celine and Michael...
There's one thing about this apartment. She's going through pictures. And she, like, they make a big deal about her finding pictures of Michael with a woman. Like, oh, he has a girlfriend. And that will never be addressed again.
Oh,
she will not
God.
Show up. She
yeah.
is, as far as we know, dead already.
She's gone. Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I he made a big point of showing it, and then it doesn't matter.
He doesn't do anything in this movie. He doesn't emote. And so, like, him smiling in those photos, I didn't even realize it was the same character. Like,
there's no breaking light on his face. He's not wet.
Why isn't he wet and sad?
Why isn't he blue?
Yeah, why isn't he wet, blue, and sad?
Why isn't he blue?
Look, I know they say tall, dark, and handsome, but I like him like wet, sad, and blue.
Wet, sad, and blue.
Like literally blue, because I know that it also can mean sad, but
yes.
Gotta be blue.
Oh, man. Then we get
homie.
Arguably the craziest thing in this entire fucking movie, and that's Lucien's punch knives.
God, they're...
His fucking
That's
Assassin's
right.
Creed knives.
His Assassin's Creed knives.
His fucking, like, forearm blades, like, retractable.
In every... Arms. You know, I'm glad that they didn't have any, like, last resort in the movie, because I heard that song play every time those punch knives came out.
So that's what I'm saying. It didn't need the new metal would have been overkill. Like, when the movie already carries the spirit of it so much
it's
better.
Like,
when
Last
they did it with
implied.
Deadpool, it was stupid, but the werewolf does it and it's cool.
I mean,
yes.
Listen, Levels. Sometimes hypocrisy is okay.
Look, because much like Victor's daughter, it's all about the execution.
So true.
That's too soon.
Too soon?
How dare? How dare we make light of this person that we barely knew about in the movie except for 5 seconds? And then it turns out that, anyway, you
what
did
was,
that.
She
what
comes
was
pre
version?
Refrigerated.
That's true.
Yeah.
What was their
She's
version?
She's already
to doing...
been in a refrigerator for 100 years by the time this movie starts.
We get to see more of her story in the third movie.
I don't know
I
why
wish
they
I
were...
cared.
Oh, really interesting. Like, yeah, they literally had like an allergy to like just doing it. Just this movie would have been so much better if they had a flashback of the events that were crucial to everyone's motivation at the beginning of the movie. like crucial. Yeah. And it would have made like the first half of this movie is like white noise. Like, I don't know what anyone's talking about. I don't know who any of these people are. And then, like,
there's
half,
two
like,
black characters. No, that's not entirely white noise.
That's so
well again.
So true.
We just get vampires and werewolves, and we're expected to just be like, and they're mortal enemies because, you know, they're werewolves and vampires.
Why can't they kiss? What's wrong with that? And then apparently the movie said it's not.
That's what Lucian said.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I was on the board for that. I was here for it.
I do love if Lucian's playing, like, again, replace Scott Speedman with a wolf, where it's like, okay, we can't make someone both a werewolf and a vampire, so new plan, we make a wolf a vampire.
That sounds so rad, though. I'm down.
And then it wouldn't have to be sexual. She could just, like, drip the blood into its mouth to, like, re-fucking vitalize the wolf, just like she does with Bill Nighy. And then
uses a little doggy bowl of blood.
Well, no, it's the wolf is
cute.
Like,
that'd be so cute.
It's so cute.
Yeah.
How have we never done a movie called Dogula for this movie, for this podcast? It has to exist. I'm Googling it now. Just Dogula movie. Is there a Dogula? No. Somehow nobody.
TM, copyright. We're doing it right now. I'm going to send it in the mail to myself. Dogula.
Yeah, Dogula. Okay. Legitimately so disappointed in fucking Roger Corman right now.
wait, hold on.
Dog Dracula.
There is a fashion.
Well, there's Dracula's dog.
There is a fashion line called Dogula, where it's a bunch of pictures of dogs, and they're like edgy and spooky, and like there's it says like adopt don't shop in big spooky gothic letters. So never mind, I rescind my attempt to trademark this.
Nah, fuck him. I'll take him to court on that. I'll go for the bat for the movie rights.
How about this, Dogula, let's collaborate. We got some writers here, we got some artists here.
I say we go dumber and just call it Dog Dracula.
We could do that as well, but I'm still open.
No,
we don't
pun.
We don't want the legal team of Benicula to come for us, all right?
I don't think they can come up. This is a dog. It's very different.
That's true, but listen, there's a dog. The main character of Benicula is a dog, if I remember correctly.
Yes, now Benicula has bitten the dog, but this is not a dog made by... Because that's how werewolves came about, you see, is that a vampire accidentally bled on a dog, and then the dog became a were-person... Right.
And this is reminding me of the like.
I mean, I'm pretty sure people.
Where did Jeremy go, you guys?
Good question.
I'm so here.
I mean, I thought it was just people, like fucking Eastern European people in olden foresty days saw rabies and was like, that shit's crazy. They're probably a werewolf.
Probably a werewolf.
Yes. No,
then
I'm not.
He got bit
serious.
By a wolf and now he's acting all wolfy.
Okay. I know this is a wild thought, but maybe Ben should finish talking about what happens in this movie.
Yeah, sorry.
I mean, Dogula, though.
We're at the punch knives. All right, moving on past the punch knives. But anyway, but Celine and Michael managed to get away, but it's okay because Lucian bit him and got the blood sample. Also, when I said get away, I meant drive straight into the river. Scott Speedman saves Celine because vampires can drown, I guess. And she's all like, I'm
running
a killer,
water.
And you're a healer, and I'm in love now. I think that's what the movie's going for. I don't know. And I also don't care. But Celine brings him back to the LARP mansion, which makes Craven just the most big mad. But he's a whiny little bitch, so fuck him. We're moving on. Anyway, Michael's forced to flee when the blonde vampire lady sees he's been bitten by a werewolf. And then he'll dick around for like 20 minutes before just coming back.
Erica is kind of the goat because... She does the most vampire shit in the entire movie. Everyone else.
I love Erica.
Around. Yeah, I love her. But she also is the only one that like flies. Like she's like she gets scared and she fully like just like a cat just like flies in the ceiling and starts hissing. Like she's in a kid's
it's
in the
great.
Whole sketch. Like,
yeah. How come she's the only one who does anything like that for their like vampire powers?
Because
what do vampires do
one.
That's different in this movie?
Bite people and engineer.
Well, they don't. Well, no, they don't bite people because they have clone blood, they said.
Right. No, they're cloning blood.
And apparently, based on, like, again, it being a big secret about Victor killing Celine's family, apparently have not been killing humans for hundreds of years.
Well, how nice.
Well,
We're not sure about mark. That, but yeah.
I don't know what the heck,
or
like.
Have not publicly been killing people for hundreds of years, or you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
It's like teen drinking. You're not supposed to, but everyone does it.
Yeah, they have have like a dungeon downstairs with a lot. It's like a What We Do in the Shadows situation. Anyway.
I think it's, just a quick comment. I like that they removed like the vampires murdering people aspect. Like, see, these vampires aren't all that bad, but like everything else they do is like fucking horrifying. And so I'm like,
yeah,
kill people. Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Just go with the log.
It's just a game preservation issue, not a moral thing. They're just like,
yeah,
there's a lot of us. If we keep just killing humans all the time, we're going to run out of humans.
This is true.
I mean, we really had to sand the edges off of Celine, a character who presumably supported the Dred Scott decision.
All right. So
anyway, Celine's such a fucking daddy's girl. And she's like, she doesn't bother going after Scott Speedman. She's just like, I must do a whole bad taboo and wake up like fucking Bill Nighy before he's supposed to be awakened. And goddamn, is Bill Nighy just, he's so gooey and he's so hammy.
Yes, love it.
Gooey, big gooey ham.
King.
Anyway, I love it. So they're like, if we find Scott Speedman, we'll have to kill him because he's a Lycan. And then he comes back and they just let Celine take him in a car. They just go for a drive. This movie, y'all. I don't know what the fuck's happening, but I sure do have a fun time.
It's delightful.
Like, they bond and they go to, like, the safe house laboratory. And, like, they start to bond. And then Celine's like, I love genociding, the thing you're turning into. And Michael's like, damn, that's pretty fucked up. And then Celine gives her whole backstory about werewolves killing her family and Victor saving her. And Michael's like, damn, that's pretty fucked up. I know it doesn't sound it, but I truly am capturing Scott Speedman's level of emotion in this scene.
Absolutely. You're capturing more emotion than, because, like,
yeah,
he didn't even say shit. He was like, what? You know, like,
what is this place? Where am I?
What is this?
My head hurts.
My tummy hurts.
I'm being really brave about it.
I'm gonna try to shoot this chain and be bad at it.
You're so bad at everything.
That was the best part. That was the most character he had in the entire fucking movie.
The way he like tries to angle the gun like a moron. Like, it was just like literally like the worst way you could be pointing that gun. Like, I was like, what are you doing?
Stop. Oh, I love Celine's like, Michael, I have to leave you in the safe house laboratory so I can go and get yelled at by my dad and then get told to go to her room.
Yeah.
And she does.
She does. Yeah.
She's just like, well, I'm in timeout now, so I can't fight werewolves no more.
It happens.
Again, she, as much as I love Kate Beckinsale, like, again, watching this movie with my partner was 2 hours of us debating whether we want more to be her or be with her. Celine is, as badass as she is, a pretty weak character, all things considered.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she run and shoot.
Yeah.
She is video game protagonist.
She does pretty like fun. Like, she has cool flips, but like they never do anything fun with the choreography. Like, her friend hops on the wall like a freaking like spider creature. Why can't she do something fun with that?
And yeah, I feel like she has powers.
I would love some more like equilibrium-esque gun fu going down. Like, you got vampire powers and shit.
Vampires using their many, many years of learning maths.
I just want people
turning into like clouds of mist and then reforming, shooting guns like through the air, like John Woo.
That's beautiful.
This movie likes to introduce stuff that sounds cool and then do nothing with it for the rest of the thing. Like,
yeah,
the one time somebody gets shot with the sunlight bullets happens in the
they
first 5 minutes
of the movie, back.
And they nobody. No vampire ever gets shot with a bullet for the rest of the movie.
Insane. Nope. Like, the most insane thing about this movie was that they told me UV bullets were a thing, and then the more insane thing was that they didn't use them anymore after that.
Yeah, there should have been, like, a werewolf just chucking around, like, a minigun, just firing, like, sunlight bullets out of a fucking minigun, just mowing down vampires.
Yeah, the werewolves did have, like, if anything, they sort of had the heavy artillery side of the, like, they were the heavies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas the vampires were all like precision shooters and stuff, and there weren't very there any like
and the whip guy.
and the whip guy. Like, it was either blade or shoot small gun with too many bullets.
Whip guy. Anyway, Craven's like, I'm going to be evil and betray you and help the werewolves kill this super hot vampire elder who has just the fucking sickest look, but has no lines. And then the werewolves do that. R.I.P. Amelia. You were too much a baddie for this world.
Yeah, she was too powerful.
She was.
Next, Scott Speeman rages out to new metal for a few minutes.
Rages. Bless.
That's all the context I'm giving.
Yeah.
Eventually, everyone reveals Solution's plan to everyone else through very convenient simultaneous exposition dumps. He wants to create a werewolf-vampire hybrid as a fuck you to Victor, because Lucian and Victor's daughter got married and got pregnant, and then Victor killed his own daughter and made Lucian watch. And Michael's like, damn, that's pretty fucked up. Also, Michael's from the super special bloodline. That means he can become a hybrid instead of dying. I wish they'd shown us. I wish we'd gotten to see someone get double infected and then just fucking explode.
Yeah. I was saying that it was like strategically like a really like, that should be like the final thing you do as a werewolf or vampire if you're dying in a battle. Just like bite the other person. And then they're like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
that's what you should do.
Yeah. Also, if you're a werewolf, biting should be like your first go-to.
Yeah. They're biting everything. I don't know. Yeah.
A werewolf do bite. Like when the Kreenos, to pick up the term, when the Kreenos werewolves like bit
and they pet,
they used their mouth at the thing. Did like just chop those vampires straight in half in pieces, and you know they cut their lives into pieces. This was their last resort.
It's true.
Again, implied.
Yeah. All right. And now we get the last 30 minutes of the movie, which is just nonstop vampire on werewolf violence. Craven kills Lucian for real this time with special silver gusher bullets. Celine kills everyone she can see. Silver whips. Victor kills the number two werewolf, who I haven't mentioned in this recap until now. Craven shoots more gushers at Michael. Victor killed Celine's family. So it's a lot. It's a lot happening. Anyway, this is about the part of the movie where Craven just leaves.
Yeah.
Like, you, everything would let you think that a movie that like this asshole as a character would get like the most epic of comeuppances. But no, he just fucks off.
The one thing that was firmly established about him is that he knows where the door is and he is willing to take it. All right. He's very opinionated about that. True.
Yeah.
Craven's good outside.
Craven is good out here. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You guys keep doing your thing. I'm just going to fuck him off.
He is not fucking around.
The real
taco
from TV energy. Just
It's honestly fucking hilarious. Even Victor's like, where the fuck did he go?
I like that pan over. Like, I literally laughed out loud when they panned over to the door and he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. My boy got out of there.
The musical sting, like it was like a surprise, but it was a surprise because I forgot that there was somebody else there the whole time, and then we were reminded that there was, but then now he's gone.
Can
the
we appreciate it?
I thought I was waiting for someone to come out of the door as opposed to
there. Can we just appreciate that Craven's absolute best moment in the whole movie is when he's not on screen?
So true.
Yes. God.
Lack of presence.
A real one to the end.
He's so good at not being there.
Anyway, Victor shows up, and instead of being like, nah, Craven's a lying piece of shit, don't listen to him, he's like, yeah, I absolutely killed your family. What about it? Then we get Blue Man versus British Man, and Bill Nighy just fucking owns, because after a whole movie of hyping up how nothing is stronger than the hybrid, turns out Bill Nighy is stronger than the hybrid.
Well, he's Bill Nighy.
He's new at this.
Yeah.
That's true. He doesn't even know what's going on, and his tummy hurts.
He may be blue, but he's also green.
Apparently, during the course of this, Bill Nighy did actually give Scott Speedman a concussion because a piece of the wall he went through wasn't quite as light as it should have been.
Amazing. That's just Bill Nighy being a fucking badass.
True.
But then,
that was just his strength.
But then Celine just finds a sword. I think Victor brought that sword with him.
It was
him.
Victor's sword that he killed Lucian with.
Yeah.
Yes, he killed the number two werewolf.
But
so she finds Victor's weakness, sword to the head. We straight up get the anime. Like, she's not even aware. Like, he's not even aware that he's been cut. It's like some real fucking future trunk shit. And then his face falls off. It's pretty great. Also, what happens to the villain in Equilibrium, which is pretty funny now that I think about it.
I forgot about that.
Right? Like, what was up with the 2000s and faces getting cut off?
Anime.
Also happens in Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen, but listen, don't watch that. That's a bad movie.
That is one thing that we can thank the Wachowskis for. Like, with, I mean, we can thank them for a lot of things, but as much as we talk about The Matrix with this movie, where we should be talking about Blade, the Wachowskis did make anime cool. Like, it's them, and they deserve the credit, like, here in America. Like, because all of us, like, little baby weebs, before weeb was a word, and we're like, we're going to go to the Japanimation section of Hollywood Video. And then The Matrix came out, and the Wachowskis, like, barreled the camera, and they're like, yeah, we based it off anime. You basically just watch anime and loved it. Fuck you. And I was like, yeah. It's very emotional. It's very emotional to me. And then they made Speed Racer. That was a good anime movie, and nobody can tell me different.
No. I feel like the tide has definitely turned in regards to Speed Racer. Like, I feel like Speed Racer is now, the consensus is that Speed Racer is a good movie.
Well, better be, because it's true. That's the right opinion.
The discourse I see around Speed Racer, like, again, I was there when it came out. I know it was beyond panned. But all of the modern day discourse I see around Speed Racer is very positive.
Yeah, because we've gotten over ourselves. And the Wachowskis helped us. Thank you.
Yeah, trans kids love the Speed Racer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Emily, all these soundtrack bits are done by Danny Lohner as Renholder.
Yes.
With additional vocals by Amy Lee.
Yes.
Who will shortly then go on to be, will be in the Daredevil soundtrack I was referencing, where Evanescence will take off from. So, like, she is sitting here semi-uncredited in these, just sort of, I guess, making goth noises in the background of these tracks.
Amazing.
And Danny Lohner, Renholder, is the longtime back, like, he was a member of Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
And I know that Trent Reznor did a little stuff with Pushifer, which is the other Perfect Circle adjacent thing that Maynard Keenan was doing with Danny Lohner and Charlie Clouser.
Yeah. And Kisser actually is on this as well. So,
yeah.
Revelations 22:20.
Yes. Yeah. So there was this interesting divergence there where we still had, like, some kind of, it still felt kind of indie, like, alternative as opposed to the last resort situation. And, like, I know Tool was really popular, but Tool's really good. So shut up. The end.
Somewhere Steve just went, yeah. So Tool is his shed.
I love Tool.
His shed?
Shit. That's his shed.
I know. Was right there.
That was good.
It was right there.
Is this movie feminist?
No.
No. I mean, it gives us goth action genocide Barbie.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives me a character awakened to all of the things, but other than that, I don't think that counts as feminist.
I mean,
she is a, like, giant fucking quotation marks strong female character.
Absolutely.
In the worst possible terms.
Yeah.
Good at violence,
yes. Like,
strong implies emotional development that Celine does not have.
Yeah, but, like, strong, when we talk about what people call a strong female character, which is a physically able, you know, yeah, a woman.
She is, in this case, a strong female, but not a strong character.
She can gun. We didn't even talk about when she just shot a perfect circle into the ground to then fall, like, multiple, like...
A perfect circle.
I see what you did there.
Basher Stampede did that first, so...
It's anime as fuck.
I don't know if he did it first, actually, but there in Trigun, he did do that, and he did it.
He did it best.
He did do it best, because that was Trigun 98.
Hell yeah.
Anyway.
That she's such a strong female character that they, in fact, give her, like, small, cute automatic pistols. Like, she doesn't even carry big guns.
Everyone else, it's crazy in the last scene where she's with, like, the vampire squads, where, like, they are all carrying just straight up like M4s and assault rifles, and she's just like Lara Crofting it with like pew.
Yeah, and she like, because there already is a Mary Sue in this movie, I definitely would not qualify her. Like, it's obviously the guy, it's the werewolf guy.
Oh yeah,
hybrid man. Like, that is a Mary Sue off screen doing a whole story elsewhere that we are not privy to, apparently.
I mean, like, look, there's a scene he has where Kate Beckinsale. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all good.
All right. There's a scene where Kate Beckinsale just grabs him by the neck, lifts him up, and pins him against the wall. And I've been like, damn, I want to be that self-insert character.
Right?
No, for real.
Kate Beckinsale times reader.
Celine has like, there are aspects that could be more of a character, but I'm not going to lie, when like she started going off on her backstory about her family dying, like it started getting comical where she was like, father was out there, and then mother, and then my sister, and then my cousins. Oh, and I was like, I'm going to keep going.
And my horse, and my dog.
I wanted to keep going.
My dog.
And grandma.
Grandma.
And Uncle John.
And weird Bob from next door. And
like Goldfish Goldie? Eaten by the cat. The cat choked on the goldfish.
Like, men in tights. Like, she had stuff that was like, it could have been interesting. Like, I kind of like the idea of her like relationship with, you know, vampire lord guy. It's like this weird familial relationship. There was a lot of, the aspects were all there. The pieces were there.
Yeah.
The script was not following.
It is this sense where it's like, it's like her being like, oh, I've been betrayed by my father figure. Now I kill my father figure is like 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, what we get in the movie is mostly like the first time she runs into any kind of true quandary or dilemma. Her only thought is like, I'm going to go get my dad to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And between her and Erica, like,
Erica, whose only motivation is she wants to be with Craven.
It's really sad for her. That didn't work out.
Girl. I hope that by the end, instead of wanting to be with Craven, she hopes they both fuck up and then she can be queen, like, by herself.
That'd be cool. Like,
yeah, I'd be into that.
I am a fan of Erica. Like, her, I wish she was in it more, but there's no, like, even though they don't mention dudes' names, like, all of their interactions revolve around those dudes, so Bechdel test failed.
Mm-hmm.
But them girl bossing together, and Erica's being like, I want you to fuck up, but you really want this, so, you know, your aspirations and my aspirations are aligning. That was a good bit. I really like that.
I like to think that Erica's isn't about Craven so much as like the position.
Yes. Yeah. She wants to be like, in the position.
He's a puppet like leader, let's be honest. Like, she just wants to be the one pulling the strings.
Oh yeah. She's the thirsty girl, and she's like, oh, this is nice. You know,
absolutely.
Like, absolutely. And she's like, she would totally fucking wreck shop.
She would.
As the vampire queen. Like, she'd come in. She would like make sure vampires have good food, and then she'd like broker peace with the werewolves and kill the Nazi one and be like, hey, werewolves, if you've been on 4chan, come to my house tonight. And then all of those werewolves die.
Those ones are gone.
Yeah.
She sends the invite on 4chan so they think she's shit.
What's that? She is that clever. She does go and like basically lurk around shitty like social medias and finds all the werewolves and vampires and is like, come over to my house. And then, of course, they'd be like, no way. And then she'd kill them. And like, so they would all bathe in their blood and have like a beach party with their blood.
And then a wolf can drink blood out of a skull, like I was saying earlier.
Yeah, and then she can create the hybrid, the most ultimate being, by giving a wolf the blood of all these assholes. And then, because it's in a wolf and all dogs go to heaven, then their bad vibes will be sublimated into a heroic werewolf.
We all know the deep lore that all dogs do, in fact, go to heaven. Yeah. They have radiant damage. All dogs.
That's why werewolves are so effective against vampires.
Oh, shit.
Vampires.
Oh, we can't put that in.
There's a reason I'm not saying it out loud.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Y'all's writing talents are really good. Anyway, so this movie is not feminist.
No, this movie is not feminist. I mean, the only things queer about it, though. Yeah, again, the only things queer about it are the feelings I had watching it.
There are vampires in it, therefore there's some queerness somewhere in there because there's no such thing.
These are the most no homo vampires.
They are
pretty, yeah. They're like, this is like the one house of vampires on Earth, like left. That's like, but I'm not gay. Like they're all just like they're all here in this house.
The gays do not claim Kraven.
They do not.
Sure.
They do not claim him.
And I think, pretty sure there's some vampires.
I mean, they may take a lot of stuff from White Wolf, but the only thing that they take from Interview with the Vampire is the little sun iris thing that they used to kill the vampire.
Yeah.
They have zero interest in that sort of queerness. They're just like, oh, no.
Yeah. Which is
they
too
just
bad.
Thought that, they were just really, really good friends.
Also, this is a world where vampires absolutely can have babies.
That's true. That's right. Werewolf. Well, maybe you need a werewolf or like some other, you know.
That was also the case in Blade, where there was a schism between those who were born vampires and those who were turned vampires.
Right.
It didn't really go anywhere, but it was there.
It was present.
Yeah.
This movie loves to be like, what is the one thing that you know about a thing? Well, that's not true. What is the one thing you know about vampires? Oh, they're undead. They, you know, returned from humans. No, not true. What's the one thing you know about werewolves? Oh, they change when the moon comes out. That's not true.
No, they don't.
Not in this one. What's the one thing we just told you about Lucian that you absolutely know about Lucian? Oh, he's dead. He died a few hundred years ago. No, it's not true. He'll be in the next scene. It's the one thing we've established from the beginning. It's like a Christmas carol, but if like Marley walked in perfectly alive and fine in the next scene, like Marley was dead. Actually, here he is. He's okay. He's not a ghost, just visiting. Because this movie is like, there's been a war and it's been going on for all this time, but like Lucian was the leader and he died. He's the leader of the werewolves. He's dead. Werewolves are dying out. And then 5 minutes later, they're like, actually, Lucian, not dead. Werewolves, not dying out. None of this was.
Yeah, there's shit ton of werewolves, so many that they're like killing each other for fun. And then like Lucian is alive. And then,
I mean, there's something a little gay about the werewolves in like a Fight Club kind of way, especially with the like, look, there's no lady werewolves. We're just going to get big, muscly and hairy and just get sweaty and dirty and roll around with each other all day for fun.
That's what I'm saying. They're the characters with the most chemistry in the whole movie.
That's true.
Except for maybe the actual chemistry set.
Yeah, fucking Werewolf Mangle and his science set have the most like just raw chemistry.
That guy, in terms of character acting, like I was expecting a lot more character acting from anyone else other than like Michael Sheen and Bill Nighy. But that dude was really carrying it. He was like, I am the vampire.
That dude understood the assignment.
He did. Yes.
That dude was like, hold on, I'm playing a werewolf mad scientist? Yeah, I got this.
Yeah.
Say no more.
With his little Himmler glasses and everything.
He's like the Frau Brugger of this movie.
Yeah.
Now, nobody else understands the assignment, but he knows.
Oh, yeah. Does this movie have anything to say about race? Oh, boy. Pass.
Bad things.
Yeah, I mean, I do wish, as like basic as it is, it would have been cool to see like the deep voice guy werewolf like kill the shit out of the whip having vampire. Mm-hmm. But we don't even get to see the death. We just have a cutaway.
Yeah,
like dude gets all slashed and shit. And I would just love to like the end of American Werewolf, like all those American Werewolf movies where they like eat the heart of the other werewolf. Like I wanted to see him like break him in half. And like scoop out his heart and then eat it while like the vampire was like trying to regenerate there and watching this dude like eat his heart while he's like flipping him off. Like that would have been so good and it didn't happen. And that, you know, and then I think that character was killed too. Like the big guy.
I think so. It's hard to tell when they're a werewolf because they all kind of just like look like werewolf.
Yeah, he was like werewolfed out at that point.
If anybody can write him into the next movie, it's him because he co-wrote the movie.
There we go. Yeah.
God, but seriously though, that guy being like that guy writing that movie and being in that movie, like that dude's a fucking triple threat,
right?
Oh, yeah,
like what a fucking boss.
Yeah, that dude's like a fucking logarithmic threat. Man, his voice though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he should get money. I hope he does voice acting because, like, for real. Anyway.
I guess my two cents on the issue is, like, literally, this whole movie, like, if two tiny things had not been present, it would have been, like, I would have said it was a lot more, like, less bad on this front. But, like, literally just get rid of the weird, like, Nazi doctor who works for werewolves.
Yeah.
To help question mark the werewolves. Because, like, I wanted to be emotionally invested when, like, Lucien was, like, looking at the love between this werewolf and vampire. And he was like, oh, my God, it was just like me for real. Like, you know, like, that was like, I could see what they were trying to do. But, like, then I remember that he has a fucking Nazi doctor with him. And then, like, the fact that, like, Celine is not interested in, like, the whole movie is not interested in like, examining the ideas that they are bringing up. Yes. They have no, they don't want to touch it. They're like, wow, I'm so glad this cute boy is here. Like, that's
you're so right. Like, it really is just cute boy. It really does go into absolute, it spends no time exploring her going, my life is a lie and I've been killing innocent people.
Yeah. Zero, like, it's off screen where she's blacking out for 20 minutes while her boyfriend fights her dad. And then she has just katana runs through him, and that's the movie. And that's the movie.
So pretty much this movie is 10 tips for dating my vampire daughter.
Yes, that's yes.
I guess, yeah.
I guess so.
Don't be a werewolf or kill your dad.
I guess
this movie, I guess, kind of deals with class. I mean, it's like, there's, like, elements of, like, again, like, the vampires are very rich and the werewolves live in, like, the sewers and they were, like, the slaves and vampires were the masters. But, like, it's there, but it's all, I don't know what to say or what it's saying beyond just, like, slavery bad.
Slavery is bad. I mean, however, sometimes slaves have...
Fucking Lucien, I swear. I loved being a slave. Shut up,
that's
man.
Right. That's right. Shut the fuck up, Lucien. Like, I didn't even mind. I just got to bang a werewolf.
He was like, sweet.
Or, I mean, a vampire. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
What?
Yeah,
I loved being in a reverse Thomas Jefferson situation.
So great. God. Fucking this movie. Yeah, like, even shit like that, where it's like, is it even saying slavery bad? I would say it's uninterested with examining the idea.
God. Yeah, like,
I still this movie, just like the half an hour of Celine continuing to shoot every werewolf in sight after she learns that, like, oh, actually, we're the bad guys.
We're the baddies.
So wild.
The baddies. No, it's weird too, because she does that, and, like, it might have been okay if she thought that Craven was lying, and then, like, the guy was like, no, yeah, he was totally lying or whatever. Like,
yeah.
She believes Craven unquestionably.
He was just like, yeah. Oh, yeah, why would this liar ever lie to me?
God. And I mean, I feel like if they had her react other than shoot, like, they would have to write a different character trait for her. So that's probably why she didn't do anything but shoot, because she's like, the only thing she knows how to do is shoot. She doesn't have any other, like, options. The buttons don't do anything else, like cry or
I'll shoot.
Meditate or, you know,
grayscale
consider. Vampire shoot.
Journal. Just vlog. Literally anything.
Can't even
else.
Save the fucking game. It's just shoot.
Just shoot. That's it.
Yeah.
Always moving forward. Well, she unlocked the new button, slice.
That's right. That's... She did unlock slice by the end of the movie.
That's exciting. Character development.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Mental health, physical disability, no. Nothing is said.
Nothing. But
they make medical stuff scary. I mean, the main guy is a nurse, but
it really is all about class, honestly.
I mean, it is about class.
Werewolves being so low class, they're literally underground and
underworld, you might say.
Underworld.
I mean, that is the main thing, is class. It's just, I mean, there's just nothing. It's there, but what does it say beyond werewolves fighting vampires? Sure is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, classism is bad, but sometimes the downtrodden have to hire Nazi scientists because they have no other option. It's very confusing to me. It's very confusing messaging. And, like, I like the weird German coded shit with a lot of the werewolves. I'm like,
so. That actor that plays, what is his name in this?
I don't even know. He has a name. He's...
But not... Oh, he has a Bangala. Name. He has a mononym. Singe.
Yes.
Singe. Wow. He's played by Erwin Leder, who is in fact German, who is literally in Das Boot. Like, he's actually a real actor.
Yes.
Not that, I mean, wildly, this movie is full of real actors.
That is yes. true.
Yeah.
You
more,
know who
more
else
actors
German?
Than it honestly has any right having.
Hey guys, you know who else is German? Uwe Boll.
Now that's 2000s.
I'm just saying, like, we were all thinking about Blood Rain, and now I brought it up.
I was definitely trying not to.
Yeah,
you know what
sorry.
My favorite piece of trivia about this movie is that Kevin Grevio, who created this, is Deep Voice Werewolf and also is a writer of Marvel Comics, tried to pitch to Marvel Comics doing a crossover between Underworld and Blade. And Marvel Comics was like, yeah, we might want to do more stuff with Blade, so no. And like the idea of there being a Blade Underworld crossover is so wild.
That would have been a delightful comic.
I think it would have been a delightful comic. I think it would, but the way that it would work, just in terms of like
worlds,
I think just Blade would absorb Underworld. Yes. Like Blade would just be like, this, by the way, Underworld is also Blade. This is just a different town having different problems where there was no Blade to like keep things in check. Mm-hmm. And this is what happens when vampires overrun, when there's no Blade, is the vampires start like killing werewolves and like being bored.
And lounging around in their finest confused era clothing.
Yes. And smoking opium.
Blood opium. I don't know how it works as a vampire.
Maybe they were vaping. I don't know. If they could vape, they would.
They would.
It's drug blood, like in What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, it's drug blood.
And hell yeah. Like,
that is funny how the Das Boot guy, like his accent, somehow resembled Nandor the Relentless, even though they were completely different accents. There was still like, I don't know, maybe it's that just I'm a fun, weird thing accent. We're both going for her. Anyway, do we have anything else? Any other questions?
No. Do we recommend this movie?
Fuck yes.
Right. How much fun was this?
The movie is so dumb and so fun.
Yeah.
It's all carbohydrates. It's like basically like shrimp chips, the movie.
Oh, this is like, this is a trip to the mall. This is spending all of you. This movie is going to the mall and spending all your money on Hot Topic and Cinnabon.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And
it's equally nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how we decided the Kate Beckinsale got that leather outfit, is that she went to Hot Topic, but then what was it? She got gaseous damage on all of her pores. And then when all of her pores started to heal, it like
it just
merged with the leather, so her like default skin is leather.
That's why that one moment where like her friend is picking out the dress for her to wear and it's like literally transparent. I'm like, does she put it over the leather?
Yes, she like, puts it over the leather.
It's not allowed to come off. Like you have to wear the leather bodysuit.
Yeah.
And then accessorize.
Yeah, she's and like she is made to be rendered in polygons.
It's true.
For real.
So true.
So would y'all recommend the movie?
Yeah.
I would. I do think the first half of this movie is a rough one because it makes very little sense. And you kind of just have to enjoy the flips and stuff and the kicks.
Yeah.
But then the second half, I was really getting into it.
Yeah.
Jeremy?
I mean, it's whatever. Like, I wouldn't recommend it to somebody just off the cuff. I wouldn't be like, you know what you should watch? Underworld.
No. This is for a special kind of person.
Well, this
is
for
but
somebody,
it's like, you know,
like,
if you have for some reason an excess of like Cheetos and weed in your house that you just have to get rid of.
You know I always have an excess of both of those things in my house.
Exactly. That's perfect.
Yeah. If like
I'm
don't
kidding, I don't eat
hard.
Cheetos.
So true.
This is a better movie to watch. Like if, in terms of 2000s entertainment, I would definitely recommend watching this over any 2000s American made comedy.
Yeah.
Like the 2000s was a rough time for American dramedies. Unless they were like directed by Steven Soderbergh or whatever.
What about Anchorman?
Wes Anderson.
Would you qualify Anchorman as a dramedy?
So true.
Yes.
He wasn't a glass case of emotion.
That's true. That's drama.
I thought Emily said comedy, and now I'm too deep into it, so I'm just going to power through and stick with
commit.
It.
Commit.
I'm committing. I'm fully committing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a story of a man's downfall and his triumphant redemption.
I thought that was Talladega Nights.
It's all of them.
I mean, yeah.
He's been playing the same character for a while in 2000.
I mean, yeah.
Although he did do Stranger Than Fiction in 2000s. Will Ferrell's in Stranger Than Fiction. It is a quote-unquote dramedy, but it is a very, very good movie, actually.
I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty afraid to find out how Old School has aged.
Old School was already pretty bad when it came out.
You were saying?
I feel like I cannot, in good conscience, recommend Underworld. I mean, it fucking is what it is. It's a movie that defies explanation in a lot of ways. It's like, how did you end up with this particular cast of people? Like, how did this get made? That's a good name for a podcast.
Yeah.
It's so wild. I can't imagine, honestly, sitting down to want to watch a movie like this and not choosing The Matrix instead.
Like, or Blade.
If I want this, but better, I mean, I could somehow put on The Matrix and Blade at the same time. You know, like,
there you go.
Yeah, there it is. Perfect. Okay, again. This movie is definitely not as good as Blade or Matrix. Those are two much better movies. Yeah. But I do love Underworld.
I also love Underworld. And if we love Underworld, what would you recommend?
Blade and The Matrix.
Phoenix, yeah. I know you have one.
Oh, yeah. No, you guys have been like, oh, well, what could we watch instead of this movie if you feel weird about the Nazi scientist or the weird undertones? Van Helsing is right the fuck there. All right.
Beckinsale in it too.
I'm yeah. actually going to give a similar recommendation. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
Oh my God, that movie.
That's a fun one. That's one we should cover at some point. It is fun.
Such a good time.
Terry Gilliam?
Yeah.
Did Terry Gilliam do that? Shit. Jesus Christ.
I believe so.
I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to recommend the TV show Staged, which does feature Michael Sheen as one of the two main characters, along with David Tennant, deal with the fact that they're both supposed to be doing a play together when COVID happens. And so they decide that they're going to rehearse and run lines over Zoom while their lives are falling apart. So it's like a very time-specific show that, like, literally both of them were supposed to be doing other things and those things got canceled. So they were like, what if we made a TV show that was us as us having nervous breakdowns over the internet as all this was going on? So like, it's the first season is that. And then the second season is like Stage gets picked up to do an American adaptation of it. And they're trying to like weasel their way into playing themselves in the American adaptation while like, they're like the American company that's bought it is literally trying to find anybody else to do it. So, you know, they get to throw in a bunch of different guest stars at one point. You know, Samuel L. Jackson is supposed to play David Tennant's part. And
incredible.
Yeah, it's a great piece of like meta fiction commentary that also like leans very hard into the pandemic years of insanity.
I didn't know that was actually a show. I've seen clips of it, and I thought it was just like a interview that they did, but that's awesome. I didn't know that it was actually, is that available anywhere?
At the time it was on, I think it was coming out, I want to say it was on Hulu or something. It looks like now it's maybe on BritBox. So it looks like it's probably available to buy or rent on Amazon. And I'm not sure where else, but yes, there's three seasons of it. I don't actually think I've seen third season if it's come out yet. The first two seasons, without a doubt, I love, because it's just actors being themselves and being, you know, slightly elevated versions of themselves. Okay, so yeah, the third season came out in 2022.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah, fantastic show, check it out.
I recommend anime. Swatch. We recently released an episode that we reviewed last year of Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust. That's a good one. And then one of my recommendations is go on YouTube and find the BDGs, Hebe BGs, where Brian David Gilbert does his covers of the BGs as a vampire and a werewolf, respectively.
Amazing.
And he does Stayin' Alive as a vampire, and he is really rocking the Michael Sheen look in that. So if you want, like, what Underworld should have been, which is just Michael Sheen as a vampire, werewolf, whatever he was, strutting around to the Bee Gees, this is that. This is what Underworld, this is the Underworld that we want.
People have been asking for.
This is the Underworld that people have been asking for. It's not 2 hours long. It's just a couple of videos, but they're really fun. And yeah, there's so many other things. There's so many things out there. There's Blade. There's What We Do in the Shadows. There's a lot of vampire stuff out there. But I think that this is a fun movie. The Underworld is a fun movie to watch, especially if you're going to look up that Key and Peele sketch about the vampire guy. I can't remember the name of that sketch, but just look up Key and Peele vampire and then send yeah. them loves and remind Jordan Peele and Keegan Michael Key that they're important. Not that they don't know, but I love it.
All righty. Do we want to wrap it up? Do the pluggy plugs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Phoenix, would you like to tell people where they can find out more about what you do online? Or do you want people to find you online?
I do not want to be found. Do not want to be spoken to. I have an Instagram at Hearthfire2. I draw art, various medias, sometimes my own medias. And on Tapas, which is a webcomic place, I have two webcomics that people could check out if they want, called Rising Tides and My Champion, respectively.
Yeah. Awesome. And Ben, let people know what's going on with you.
Yeah, BenConComics.com. Find me on the black hole that is Twitter at BenTheCon, BenConComics everywhere else. And make sure to check out cool stuff like Captain Laserhawk manga out now.
And I'm megamoth.net. Just go on there and find me, mega_moth on Instagram, megamoth blue sky, and Patreon, which is where I post most things. And maybe Tumblr too, but I mean, if you want.
Fantastic. Yeah. So right now you can find my new graphic novel, The Cold Ever After, in stores. It's queer, it's noir, it's fantasy. It's a little bit of everything you could possibly want and some things you probably don't. You can find me online on Instagram or Twitter at jerome58, at jeremywhitley.com, or on Tumblr or Blue Sky as Jeremy Whitley. So do that and check out the podcast at Progressively Horrified on our website at progressivelyhorrified.transistor.fm and on Twitter at ProgHorrorPod. We'd love to hear from you. And of course, speaking of loving to hear from you, we would love it if you would rate and review this podcast wherever you are listening. It helps us find new listeners and then we get to make more stuff. Thanks again to Phoenix for joining us. It was a ball.
Thank you guys for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
This was a blast.
This is what I feel like we've been talking about since the beginning. So.
Oh, yes. This has been, this was worth the wait. This was so, oh my God, this was fun.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, and until next time, everyone, stay horrified.